Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Dave Hanratty and Marion McKeown are with us for the week trending. And Marion, a week ago we covered on this programme how Donald Trump had missed out on the Nobel Peace Prize. He seems since to be trying to do everything he possibly can to try and get next year's award, because earlier in the week, as we've discussed with you, he was involved in going to Israel and announcing the peace plan there for Gaza. And tonight he's meeting Vladimir Zelensky, having spoken to Vladimir Putin on the phone last night. So where are we getting, do you reckon, in relation to the potential of some sort of ceasefire or deal in relation to Ukraine?
Not far. I think, honestly, what happened there was that Putin went, you could almost see him last night sitting there going, oh, Jesus, your man's flying into Washington tomorrow, Zelensky. I better call this moron. And that's my Putin impersonation. And remind him which side
Stick
is...
to the reporting and forget the impersonations, will you?
And remind him which side his compromise is buttered on. Because I really think Putin just put in the call and went, whoa, 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 cool your jets there, cool your tomahawks. Remember, you know, as I say, literally which side your compromise buttered on, and let's have a little chat. And I think that Trump came out of that going, well, we need our own tomahawks. He's so suggestible. You know, we saw the whole debacle in Alaska where Putin went off without having had his lunch either, and then he flew off to China to the big strongman sleepover party that Trump wasn't invited to, and Trump got the hump, and then he was all pally with Zelensky. But Trump is, you know, to say he's unsophisticated in his thinking when it comes to international diplomacy is kind of an understatement. So I think he's going to freeze Zelensky a bit now. He's talking about an unspecified meeting with Putin. And Putin just wants to slow things down, and it's happening. It's happening every time he calls him. He just freezes it.
Dave, Marion said an unspecified meeting with Putin, but he has a location picked. Even if the date is not set, the location has been nominated as Hungary. And a friend of mine was on to me today making the point that Hungary is part of the European Union. The European Union believes Vladimir Putin is a war criminal. If he sets foot in any EU state, he's supposed to be arrested. But of course, Hungary won't do that. Orbán will roll out the red carpet for Putin. And what then does the European Union do about its rogue member in its midst?
All of this is alpha male behaviour to an extreme degree. I mean, the fact that Putin picks up the phone because Zelensky might be getting some new Tomahawk missiles from Trump, which, by the way, I don't know how you win a peace prize by giving missiles to another person, despite the fact that obviously Ukraine are in dire need of said weaponry. Yeah, of course. Like the two key words in that summation there is Viktor Orban. So Viktor Orban will just flex his muscles, Putin will flex his muscles, Trump will do the same. And it does feel a bit like saber-rattling. It does feel a bit like, let's just push this out for as long as we can and see how people will react. And he can't help but feel sorry for Zelensky getting on a plane and then this march being stolen on him from afar. And even, like, you know, he referred to it as like a little chat. 2.5 hours on the phone.
Yeah.
2.5 hours.
A little chat.
Trump and Putin. Like, is the entire thing about Tomahawk missiles? What else was discussed there? So, and it's just, as you say, he's so suggestible. It looks like he's leaning one way and then this person comes along. We know how much he adores attention, but this is getting out of hand. And also, I do recall him saying in his campaign speeches, I will end the war in Ukraine in one day, on day one.
Yeah.
Well, actually, this listener here who says, and I think this is aimed at me rather than you, Marion, it could be both of us. If Trump ends the Ukraine war, what will you moan about next? And another one says,
both of us.
A president ridiculed for wanting to achieve peace. Strange world. Well, I don't think he's been ridiculed for wanting to achieve peace.
And also, it's very self-serving.
But
what's
his definition of peace? Is peace the crushing of Ukraine? Is peace just giving Putin what he wants and then the war is over?
Is peace the ceasefire that isn't holding right now in Gaza? Like, does that count?
Well, let's hope that holds. But, you know, that's like, peace on Putin's terms. I mean, you know, this is all... And again, Trump just wants to be part of the strongman gang. So it's Putin, it's Orban, it's Modi. He has no time for Zelensky. Zelensky isn't his kind of leader.
He's a beta male by comparison to the other guys.
Although he's got a lot more courage from what we've seen.
But you also say about the peace holding. I think what Dave is referring to is that while Israel may not be firing rockets into Gaza, it's turned in the other direction and is firing into South Lebanon in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
What changes?
Honestly, I don't know, because I do think that Trump did something, and I do respect Trump for this, and I not respect him, but I will credit him for this, in that he was willing to strong-arm Zelensky. Not Zelensky, I beg your pardon, Netanyahu. He was willing to say no more bombs and no more like billions of dollars in military aid because I'm fed up with this. But it was only because Netanyahu bombed Doha. It was only because he went into his buddies in Qatar. Trump doesn't care about the Palestinians. He doesn't care about Gaza. So I'm really nervous about this.
Okay, the same listener is back about what we moan about and says, you use bang on, which I think means all of us, about how he didn't end it in 24 hours. But what about the wars he did end? How many wars has Donald Trump ended?
He hasn't ended.
Seven or eight.
He hasn't ended any war.
Yeah, send in another text message there, would you? Because I do want to find out. And I don't want to miscite him, so...
Honestly, you know, the reason he fell out with Modi was because he said, oh, I ended this. And when you saw
the battle between India and Pakistan,
it was almost comical to see the Pakistani Prime Minister there going, nominating for a second time. So he knew how much it was going to drive India crazy, because India sees itself as being the 800-pound gorilla in that room. And they believe they could swat Pakistan like a fly. So for Trump to give Pakistan that level of status was ridiculous.
Meanwhile, back in the United States, tell us about J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is almost more worrying than Donald Trump, particularly in the way that he is prepared to endorse racism, Dave, I think it's fair to say, isn't it?
You said it, not me, but I will give you the information. Yes, so basically there's been this very fascinating read, and I encourage everyone to check it out. Politico had this months-long dossier that they were putting together, exchanges from a Telegram conversation between leaders and members of the Young Republican National Federation and some of its affiliates in New York, Kansas, Arizona, and Vermont. And the content of these messages was quite alarming. Lots of racism in there, like the rape being referred to as epic, saying that they love Hitler. And Vance has come out to say, this is, look, we all make mistakes when we're young. It's youthful indiscretions. And he said this, by the way, on a new episode of the Charlie Kirk Show, which it sounds like a redundant sentence to me, but I guess it's still going, under new management, run by his colleagues. But Vance has said, look, you know, the reality is kids do stupid things, especially young boys. They tell edgy, offensive jokes. That's what kids do.
31-year-old man.
This is the thing. 8 of the 11 Republican operatives who took part in the offensive chat range between 24 and 35. Vance himself
and
is 41.
The 8-year-old in there as well.
His broader point about we don't want people growing up who make mistakes in this kind of fashion to not have a life, that's a fair enough point. You can look at that, and we've all done things when we were younger and so on and so forth, but he hit the age of 24.
Except Matt.
except Matt, of course, sorry. And sorry to the listener, who I'm sure will be offended by that as well. The reality is, you can't mitigate for people who are in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, you know it's wrong. I'm sorry, but there's no way of dressing up someone saying, I love Hitler. Like, that is alarming, and I don't want to sound hysterical, but there is a massive problem with young men today who are very much leaning towards admiration for, I can't even believe I'm saying the words, Adolf Hitler. Like, it's like, what has happened? Like the lack of education or just some kind of weird radicalization. But for Vance to come out and say, oh, this is just, you know, the Democrats looking to get one over on us, and it's no big deal, nothing to see here. No. You have to engage with this, and you have to say, listen, I condemn what was said. It's bad. We'll try and look into this. They're not kids, by the way. Once again, I can't stress that enough.
And then tomorrow there's a fascinating thing happening in America, the No More Kings rallies all over the United States of America. And in advance of that, the likes of Mike Johnson, the Republicans, Vance and others, are trying to portray anyone who gets involved in this as being dangerous radicals ultra-leftists, that they have no respect for authority or the law, that they're going out to try and create riots, that anyone who engages in peaceful protest against terrible things happening in the United States has been demonised and has been gaslit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to pick up very quickly just from what Dave said there, because there was also another incident in the House of Congress, in a representative's office rooms. They all have these rooms there, where one of his staffers, a Republican, had an American flag doctored with a swastika in the middle of it. This is not as fringe as they would like to pretend. And the irony of J.D. Vance, who of course compared Trump to Hitler, now saying, well, Hitler isn't so bad. So is he trying to flatter Trump? You know, it's not so bad to be compared. It's not so bad that I did compare you to Hitler. But to get back to, and it is all part of the same thread. And I have real concerns about these No Kings marches tomorrow, because to my mind, if you listen to, they all got the same talking points. You know, J.D. Vance, Mike Johnson, all of them, all of the top, that Steve Miller, and they are, Kirsty Noem, they are putting the protesters in a line and on a level with, they've described as Al-Qaeda, Hamas, all of these groups, Trendaragia. They're saying, if you are a protester, you are of that ilk, and therefore you will be treated like those people. And they're doing it in two ways. To me, they're softening up the ground for a pretty brutal pushback by the police or by, you know, whoever, against these protesters. But also, it's like a wolf whistle to me, or a dog whistle for the extreme, these guys who, the Hitler lovers and all these people, to come out with their guns and to take these people on. And I just feel America is like a tinderbox at the moment, and it just doesn't need this sort of thing. And as well, you know, all these, remember the Three Percenters and the Proud Boys and all of these groups, the Oath Keepers, they've all been co-opted into ICE. These are the guys who got, instead of being prosecuted when they were pardoned, they're all now conscripts into ICE and doing that kind of work for Trump. It's really worrying.
We will leave all of that and we will come back to things that are happening here at home in Ireland in the rest of the week trending after we've had this break.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Marion McKeown and Dave Hanratty with us. Dave, I'm looking at an advertisement which is in Australia, aimed at Irish people. You built the world, now come and build back home. Tell us about this.
It sounds really patriotic and cool, doesn't it? It sounds very inspiring, but at the same time, as our good friend Brianna Parkins pointed out, it's not necessarily as, I guess, relishing as it looks. I mean, this is all part of a campaign that was launched actually February 2024, which the Department of Higher and Further Education, the Build Back Home campaign, to basically get construction workers back home and working in Ireland and building up this country instead. Which again, you know, nice idea on paper, but does it work out? Do the maths work out? I mean, it's like, again, to quote Brianna here, she said, well, will they match the salaries that people are being paid in Sydney? Will they find them affordable rentals back home? Now, we may disagree on this, Marion, but I think that the government, I think if you're enticing someone to come back home to work and live in Ireland, especially if you're over in another country where you're doing well, you got to incentivize it, right? You got to, like, is this part of something? Remember Simon Harris's infamous pledge to, I promise to bring all your children back home, it's going to happen? Is it really happening? Like, I know people, we all know people in different parts of the world, especially in Australia, and they come home once a year, you get to see them very, very briefly, and you ask the question, any chance you move back home anytime soon? And they're like, no, why would I?
I'm just looking at a photograph that was taken inside the Sydney Opera House of, oh, there must be 150, 200 Irish people together with tricolours, all standing behind a banner, hashtag give us a reason to come home.
That's exactly it. And it's just like, if it's not there, and like love for your country isn't enough, unfortunately, because these people left for a reason. They left because they were being priced out of everything. They can't own their own home. They don't have anywhere to go. So you leave. It's depressing. We hate it. We have lost our friends, our family, like in this regard, and we see them very, very seldomly in life. But at the same time, If you don't have enough of a thing to a better option back here, and it's just words, it's a flashy ad campaign. That's all it is.
Would it be better off used in America, do you think, Marion? Might there be takers for it?
I think there are probably a lot more takers, you know, for it in America, where Irish people worked and owned very successfully, owned construction companies, had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of people who went over there and ended up setting up their own businesses, and are now being forced to either run the risk of ending up in a detention centre or to make the move back home. You know what? I think Dave and I do disagree a bit in this, because I think, you know what, the government is saying, and I'm just looking here, that there are, you know, about 70,000 job vacancies for plumbers, architects, electricians, whatever. And I think they're saying there are loads of jobs here. Don't stay away because there are no jobs.
But where will people live when they come back?
You know what? That is an issue. And the government, but you don't get to jump the queue on people who've been waiting for housing in Ireland for years or decades because you're coming back home to build houses. You know, I mean, like a lot...
Well, sorry, maybe if you're being ruthless, you do. Maybe if we need to construct the houses and need people to do those jobs, you give them first dibs on the existing accommodation, because otherwise, if they don't come back, nobody's going to build the houses that we need.
Right, but can they not, you know what, there's no easy solution to this. It's a really tricky one.
It's a mess, because it's a mess that has been made for decades, and this is why we're in the situation. Again, I know people who've gone to Australia for a year, and they're there 4 and 5 years.
But actually, there's quite a few listeners saying, are any of them buying houses in Australia?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but they
can't afford to in Australia either. The price of housing has rocketed there, and a lot of property has been bought by Chinese investors.
But they still have better options when it comes to the rental market. They still have better options when
Apparently
it comes to infrastructure. They still have better options in general. Like, the lifestyle appears to be better. Look, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Everyone has a different story. But the majority of anecdotal evidence I'm seeing would point to the fact that there's a reason why people aren't coming back.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly, and the weather is probably one of them, but I've a cousin in Australia, and the rents are outrageous there as well. They're outrageous. So it seems that Australia is getting very expensive. Don't try to rent in the States at the moment, in New York or LA or any of the big cities, because the rents are insane. You know, so I think it's not just Ireland. So it is that question. If you're an electrician, by the way, I'm really looking for a plumber at the moment and an electrician. Come home, I'll give you a job.
Nearly impossible.
But I think that, you know, you make a calculated decision, you think, will you move back home and set up a business and probably find loads of work and then take it from there? I don't know.
It's a huge risk, though, especially if you're set up on the other side of the world. I mean, the amount of effort that has to go into coming back, and if you come back to something that is a false promise or you're taking the gamble, I mean, it's just, like, would you take that gamble? Would you? I don't know. I don't think you should.
Okay, let's move on to other things. Marion, tell us how apparently 1 in 10 dog owners are struggling to pay for dog food.
Well, speaking as a non-dog owner, but there are 2 cats in our house and they eat a lot. This is a terrific charity. And I think that this is a survey that took in, it's not 1,000 people, it's a really, it seems like an in-depth survey with a lot of people questioned, 30,000 I think it is. And it's shocking. It's shocking when you think, I looked up the price of going to a vet, it's what, $75 for a dog, or euros, I think, pardon, thereabouts, and you know, a couple of hundred euros to have a dog neutered or whatever. It's not
hundreds
cheap.
And hundreds for any operations, thousands sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's pet insurance, as we were chatting earlier, and it's the cost of feeding animals. I mean, and then I don't know, is dog food really expensive? And why not give animals alternatives? Do they still do things like butcher bones, or am I still living in a different world for dogs?
It's a nice treat for a dog, isn't it, a butcher bone? It wouldn't be a daily staple of their diet, I guess.
You know, it's not. That's for sharpening their teeth. That's for cane. That's
right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I better not... Okay.
You obviously haven't had a dog in a long time,
a
have you?
No.
But a lot of dogs have been given up as well, David. Yeah, people just can't afford to keep them.
This is the really sad part about this, because again, and I would concur that Dogs Trust Ireland do great work, and this census, which is said to be the first of its kind, you hear dog census, you think, oh, that sounds nice. But then they say that they've been contacted by over 2,000 dog owners seeking to surrender their dogs into care, and they say the dogs are being abandoned, as you say, at an alarming rate. Because of the costs, it's just like everything from pet sitting, kennels, grooming, pet insurance, training. And it just speaks to the fact that, like, look, we know that there are people out there who get very excited about the prospect of having a dog. We all love dogs. Dogs are amazing. But please don't take one in unless you can and unless you're willing to provide a long-term, genuine family member future for this animal, because there's too many stories of people who either are giving the dogs away or at least inquiring about doing so. And it's very, very heartbreaking. And especially, again, if it comes down to a thing where, like, we talk about the cost of living crisis all the time and the fact that it now extends to animals, again, I point to the government and its many, many failures.
Okay. Who can tell me about a Met Air and Rain project?
I'll take it. Let's do it.
Go for it.
I volunteer for this to tell you about it. So, yeah, they're looking for weather enthusiasts who are, quote, passionate about Irish weather, history and climate action, which is my usual opening line on a first date. And they want to digitise 3.5 million historic rainfall observations from 763 stations, and members of the public are being invited to transcribe these things into digital format. Now, as someone who has written many an interview in my day, transcribing is the most irritating humiliating job in the world.
Oh, but God, yeah.
It's the worst. But it has to be done, and I'd rather do it myself than have AI do it for several reasons. But this is about handwritten records that are on, you know, like that have been documented from 1864 to 1951. Now, the thing about this is people are signing up. 300 volunteers have already transcribed almost 10,000 months of historic observations. And the sell here is it's an online project that you can contribute to from your sofa, your kitchen table, anywhere in the world. And they want, again, I'm back to the word patriotism here. It's a case of wanting people to sign up to this thing and just help out. Because in doing so, it will help us understand Ireland's climate in the past and hopefully in the future. So if you are interested, irishweatherrescue.ie is the website.
Will you be doing that, Mary?
I think it's kind of cool. I'd give them an hour or two, yeah, because I want to know how much was raining in 1864. I have a personal curiosity about that. You know, why not, if you've got a couple of hours to spare, do a little bit of inputting. It's probably the least effort in a patriotic gesture you could possibly make.
Transcription, though.
Yeah, we know transcription's a pain in the neck, but, you know.
Dave, you're often here with us on our music spot, and tell us a little bit about Sam Fender winning the Mercury Prize, how significant the Mercury Prize is, and how it is that somehow it's never been won by an Irish act.
Yeah, it's weird, right? I mean, the Mercury Prize is, we have our own version of it here, the Choice Music Prize, and it's about rewarding, honouring the best album in the country for the last 10 months, or 12 months, sorry. And there was 12 albums in the Mercury, which actually is UK and Ireland, so it extends to us. And there was two heavyweight Irish acts up for this award, CMAT and Fontaine's DC. And I really bought into the hype. I bought into the bookies line saying that CMAT was going to do it. She was going to be the first Irish act to ever win this. And I watched the coverage last night, and Sam Fender's name was called out, and he was as surprised as me in that he was totally speechless. His album, People Watching, which is a good album, like it's a perfectly good record, and he won. And once again, the wait goes on for an Irish winner. I mean, like it's a prestigious prize, but it's very inside baseball. Like, it is an industry, no doubt.
Does it matter that an Irish act has never won the Mercury Prize?
Do you think anybody who knows anything about Irish music everywhere in the world and all the terrific Irish artists go, yeah, but they didn't win the Mercury?
Oh, it won't harm them.
The other one.
CMAT and Fontaines are already superstars, and their audience is just growing, growing, growing. It would have been a nice feather in their cap, and they certainly wouldn't have said no to the €28,000 that came with it. But like, there's all these conspiracy theories out there now, because it was the very, very first time the award show was held outside of London. It was held in Newcastle. Where
is Sam Fender from?
He's the Geordie Springsteen. He did shout them out though in a speech, and they were cheering him on. They are all friends, so it was a nice wholesome moment. But I was surprised. I thought we were going to do it.
You two never won it either, no?
No
Irish act.
No Irish act ever.
Sinead O'Connor is another one that obviously would spring to mind. You know, the Pogues, all these other terrific, like, there's so many great Irish artists. But,
okay,
you know.
I just want to finish with a couple of listener comments. We have 9 dogs, of which 5 are rescue dogs. The dog food costs us €380 per month.
Okay.
Librela injection for the 14-year-old dog with arthritis is €63 per month. Vet bill of over €2,000 so far this year. Grooming, €800 plus per year. Not bad. No holiday for us this year, but you got to love your dogs. And another listener, Michelle in Castle Island, says, oh my God, Matt, please don't give your dogs bones. They splinter.
Okay, I'll
sorry.
Okay,
don't listen to me.
Nice treat from earlier on,
and don't listen to me. I don't know anything about it.
Find them something better for their teeth and their general welfare. And fair play to that person before that. Here.
Yes,
really putting the work in.
That is terrific. Yeah, and better than the holiday. I would imagine having 9 gorgeous dogs. You know, so
Marion McKeown and Dave Hanratty, thank you so much.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy, over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy, live better together.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.